So I want you to imagine building a business completely from scratch, but instead of, spending thousands on all these software subscriptions or desperately trying to hire early staff, your entire operational team, like the whole thing, is made up of AI.
Right, which, I mean, sounds completely like a pitch for a sci-fi movie, right?
But
But it's actually not.
no, it's real. And we're not talking about just playing around with the chatbot to summarize a meeting or write a couple of emails.
Yeah, we're talking about AI serving as the actual functional C-suite and staff of a living, breathing company.
Exactly. And for this deep dive, we are looking at an article by Mike McCune. It's titled, What Happens When You Actually Run a Business on AI? And our goal here, the mission, is to basically give you a shortcut to understanding what it actually looks like to move AI from, a fun little novelty to the absolute core operating model of a company.
And I think it's really important to establish who Mike is before we even dive into how he did this, because it completely reframes the whole experiment.
Oh, 100%. Because he's not just some tech influencer in a garage trying to automate a dropshipping store for YouTube views.
Right. No, he is a serious tech veteran. I mean, he spent 24 years at Cisco. He worked his way up from product manager to senior director.
He ran a, what was it, a 430 million pound business in the EMEA region.
Exactly. So he brings this this deep corporate rigor to AI that you really just don't see in the typical online hustle culture discourse. He understands enterprise architecture, how large organizations are actually structured, how data flows.
Where the bottlenecks actually are.
Yes. And he quotes this old Cisco CEO mantra in his piece, which is, "Eat your own dog food."
Right. I love that. Basically, use what you sell. If you're going to advise other companies on AI transformation, you have to run your own business on it. You can't just be reading white papers.
It's the ultimate test, really, because right now, in the broader context of information overload, you have so many leaders who are just panicking.
Oh, totally.
They're constantly asking, what tools they should buy, like what's the magic software? Mike's approach completely shifts that focus from what to buy to how you actually redesign the work itself.
But okay, before he could build this incredible AI workforce, he had to hit a ceiling. A ceiling that I think, honestly, a lot of people listening are probably hitting right now. He reached the limits of using AI as just a personal productivity tool.
Yeah, and to understand that, you have to look at what he was doing before he went solo. I mean, by the end of 2025, he was in the top 0.1% of ChatGPT users.
Which is wild.
It is. And he was working in highly regulated environments at a nine-country SaaS organization called Verimatrix. He built this massive board-approved AI governance framework.
Yeah, and he rolled out Copilot to like 250 people at the Cotswold District Council too, so he wasn't a novice.
Far from it. But despite all that expertise, he hit this wall. He realized he was building these brilliant AI assistants, but they were totally siloed.
Right.
They lacked what developers call persistent context. They just didn't talk to each other.
Okay, let's unpack this because I think this is so crucial. If we think about this in human terms, it's like having five brilliant interns, right? Top of their class, super capable, but you put them in five completely separate soundproof
Right,
rooms.
they can't communicate at
They
all.
can't communicate. And worse, they have complete amnesia every time they clock in. So every time you ask them to do something, you have to re-explain the entire context of your business, who the clients are, what the goal is. So my question is, how do you break out of that loop if the tools themselves are designed to be isolated?
Well, that's where his whole philosophy shifts. He
Yes.
tracks AI adoption through three stages. First, it's a tool, then an assistant, and finally, a worker.
Okay, so a tool is like,
Like drafting a quick email.
yeah.
Use it once, you're done. An assistant might have some custom instructions, but it's still sitting in that silo waiting for your command.
It still has amnesia.
Exactly. To break that ceiling and get to the worker stage, you can't just buy a software upgrade. You have to fundamentally redesign how the work happens.
And that leads right into his next move, which I found so fascinating. Instead of going out and looking for a better app, he literally mapped out his company's organizational roles before he even picked the technology.
Yeah, he designed an org chart for ghosts.
Right. I love that phrase. And he used this specific methodology he calls radar pilot scale.
Yeah, so radar is scanning the business for friction points. Pilot is building a prototype for one specific role, like, say, invoicing. And then scale is integrating that into the wider business once it actually proves it saves time.
So he does all this mapping, and then he finally evaluates platforms like Claude Cowork and Clawbot. And he ends up choosing Claude Cowork because the integrated workspace fit his enterprise model.
Right, but crucially, he didn't abandon ChatGPT. He kept it for his personal work.
Yeah.
It's really about fit-for-purpose thinking, you know, not brand loyalty.
But wait, I have to push back here for a second. So he basically hired AI for empty seats on an org chart. Isn't this really just traditional automation? Like, isn't this just Zapier disguised as a workforce?
What's fascinating here is the distinction between automation and what Mike built. Traditional automation is a static set of rules. It's rigid. If this happens, do that.
If X, then Y.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And if the formatting changes even slightly, the whole automation breaks. But Mike designed a workforce with defined responsibilities, quality standards, and shared organizational context.
That's a dynamic.
Highly dynamic. He applied standard leadership practices to AI. He's not writing code. He's managing staff.
Okay, so let's actually meet this AI executive team because this blew my mind. To enforce this mental model of leadership, he named his AI workers after computing pioneers.
Which is such a smart psychological trick to keep you in that management mindset.
Totally. So you've got Grace Hopper. She handles operations and gives him his morning briefing.
Yeah.
You've got Ada Lovelace running marketing and content.
Ben Cerf is on the pipeline.
Right. Blaise Pascal handles the invoicing.
Yeah.
And then, and this is my favorite, Linus Torvalds is the lead web developer.
And the website build is really the showcase of this whole system.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Here's where it gets really interesting. So Mike needs a commercial website. Normally, a 15-page professional site takes weeks, right? You need an agency, wireframes, a copywriter, a developer. It's a huge headache and costs thousands.
It's a massive drain on resources.
Linus built a 15-page website in 1 week. Zero developers, zero agencies.
It's staggering. But the structural difference, and this is what's really key, is that the AI replaced the need for like 5 or 6 different SaaS platforms.
Oh, the SaaS bloat. It's the worst.
Right. You normally have a CRM, an action tracker, finance software, email marketing, and none of them talk to each other without expensive integration.
You're just constantly exporting CSVs.
Exactly. But Mike centralized the entire operating model. By removing the tech stack bloat, he basically created a unified brain for the company.
So Ada Lovelace, doing the marketing, inherently knows what VintSurf is doing with the sales pipeline because they share the same data layer.
Exactly. The friction just disappears.
That is, that's just incredible. But we should probably clarify that this wasn't just some magic autonomous wand that he waved. The reality of operating with AI is that it's fast, but it's not always smooth.
Oh, definitely not. It requires a completely new human skill set.
Mm-hmm.
Early on, his AI workers were producing this really generic consulting language.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean. That fluffy, robotic, corporate speak, synergize our learnings, that kind of stuff.
Right. So they needed serious debugging.
Right.
He had to build strict quality controls directly into their roles.
Yeah, because his day starts with that briefing from Grace Hopper, but Mike makes it very clear. The AI only generates first drafts. Human judgment is not optional.
It's absolutely required for course correction. And that brings us to maybe the most critical quote from his whole article. He says, "I don't prompt, I brief."
Yes, I wanted to jump on that distinction. Prompt versus brief. I mean, prompting is commanding a tool, right? But briefing is directing a colleague. Why does that semantic shift change everything about how we work?
Well, because it changes your whole posture. AI doesn't replace your judgment. It changes where you spend it.
Okay, explain that a bit more.
Sure. So you spend less time in the weeds drafting documents and doing admin, and you spend way more time directing the AI and doing quality control. You review the work, spot the gaps, and instruct it to revise.
You become the editor, not the writer.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is exactly why most corporate AI pilots fail to scale right now. They buy the licenses, hand them out, and treat it like a software upgrade. They totally fail to implement the operating discipline and governance needed to actually manage these tools.
So what does this all mean? If we boil this down for you listening, real AI transformation isn't about buying the best new chatbot on the market. It is about redesigning the work itself.
It's an architectural shift.
Exactly. Moving from a tool to an assistant to a worker means you have to think about the organization first and the technology second.
But, you know, Mike's experience leaves us with a really fascinating paradox to think about.
Where's that?
Well, if AI workers like Ada and Grace are now doing all the initial drafting, the administration, the execution.
Basically all the entry-level grunt work.
Right. And those tasks have traditionally served as the training ground for junior employees. That's how you learn the business. So the question is, how do future human workers develop the sharp judgment and real experience that Mike says is absolutely essential for managing the AI.
Wow. Yeah, if you never write the bad first draft, how do you learn to spot one?
Exactly. If AI does all the learning on the ground floor, how does the human ever learn to be the boss?
That is a heavy, heavy thought to leave on, but a really important one. Think about what roles you would design for your own AI workforce and what that means for your own daily work. That's all we have for today's deep dive. Thanks for exploring this with us, and we'll catch you next time.